So my whole freshman class for theater, we were all really into a Harry Potter musical. Mm-hmm. And at my college, if you were a freshman in the spring, you had to participate in the freshman showcase. And it was meant to be like a standard showcase. Like some people would sing solos and duets, and there'd be some scenes and like some group number stuff. And we collectively decided that we just wanted to do a Harry Potter musical as our senior our freshman showcase.
Uh-huh.
And we went so far as to find the sheet music for it.
Really?
Yeah, we found it. And I don't know who found it. It wasn't me. But we had cast the whole thing. I was playing one of the Cho Chang girls, like the backup singers, I think.
Okay.
If I remember.
The Cho Chang gang?
I can't remember who the characters, like which characters are the ones that sing with her. But like I was her little posse. As far as I remember, the theater staff were all on board to do it. We just had to get the rights to it. And that's when we found out the whole backstory about the rights to a Harry Potter musical. Because they created it as a parody musical and then got in really big trouble for using the Harry Potter IP, and then they had to take everything down, and then it was eventually settled so that they could put it up on YouTube, but they could never make any money off of it, and it wasn't something that anyone was ever going to be able to license. And I just remember the disappointment that we all felt that we had to do a regular showcase instead of doing a Harry Potter musical, because we had like the perfect cast for it. It was very exciting.
Oh, that's a super.
So, yeah, well, but.
Wow. Well, that's pretty cool. I do remember, like, I actually have because I'm a dinosaur, a CD version of the soundtrack for Harry Potter musical.
I may have that too.
Because I was able to find it, like a download of it. I downloaded it and burned it to a CD. And, yeah, I never really knew all that about it. Like, I never didn't really know about the legal stuff, but it makes sense.
Yeah, you can't just use other people's IP and make stuff out of it that doesn't fall under fair use because you're a student.
Right. Sure.
Copyright laws still apply. And so, I guess I don't know all of the details offhand, and I didn't look it all up because we're not talking about a Harry Potter musical today. But,
right.
Copyright law is complicated. I'm sure they could have probably argued for fair use because it's a parody, but I don't know. Don't steal other people's IP.
Right, yeah.
And expect to get away with it. Turns out you can't just make stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Hello and welcome to It's the Greatest Showman, the podcast where we talk about the musicals you love and why they're great and why they suck. I'm your host, Emily Chavone, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Brantley Wheeler.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm tired. Why did we record these so late at night?
Great question. I probably should do a better job about doing that. It's just usually like, I have to wait till my kids go to bed, and then we can record, and then they don't go to bed anyway, so I end up recording here, and they're sitting in my room watching YouTube while I'm sitting here talking to you. All right.
Once the yawns start, they don't stop. Okay.
Yeah. Do you want to just introduce what we're talking about today?
Oh, yeah. Did you read the episode title? We're talking about Starship.
I'm honestly really excited to talk about this. This is one of the first shows in a while that I had not seen, like, all the way through. And, like, I said, Heathers, I know I had said I hadn't seen, but, like...
We just talked about how you hadn't seen Wicked or Les Mis.
No, like, I was unfamiliar. Let me rephrase. I've seen Les Mis and Wicked as far as, like, I have seen a version of it, meaning the movie. This show I had heard of only really in title, but I had not seen, like, anything or heard anything from it before.
Okay.
And so I was actually really excited to watch this one.
Well, I have seen it. My high school didn't really have a theater program, so I didn't know about Star Kid right away, like most of the real, quote-unquote, theater kids. And then I got to college, and my college friends were like, what do you mean you don't know a Harry Potter musical? We're watching it right now. And that was like fall of 2011. So Starship was already out. So like the next weekend I watched Starship alone in my dorm room.
Oh, okay.
And it's right. been living rent-free in my head ever since.
I want to say I had an ex-girlfriend who introduced me to Starship, not Starship, who introduced me to Team StarKid again, like way later. Like I had, you know, my high school didn't have a theater program really. And I didn't, you know, when I first got to college, I didn't do theater and I didn't do theater for years after that. It wasn't until I started dating this one, girlfriend that I had who was very much a theater kid like I was, at least adjacently a theater kid. And she was a huge Harry Potter fan and introduced me to a Harry Potter musical and talked about how much she loved it and like was trying to get songs from that show in like her repertoire as a performer. She wanted to do Harry, I think was the song she wanted to try to like find music for and couldn't find it. Cause of course you can't, cause StarKid's kind of weird about stuff like that. But after that, I didn't really do anything with StarKid after that at all. You know, until I, you know, started looking them up on my own. And it wasn't until like I met you that I like really knew about Starship at all. I knew that Team StarKid existed and what they did, but I hadn't watched any of their other shows. Mm. I had only watched a Harry Potter musical. Well, that's not true. I watched the three Harry Potter musicals. So one senior year and whatever the last one is.
So Starship.
Starship, right, yeah.
Starship is a 2011 American musical with music and lyrics by Darren Criss and book by Matt Lang, Nick Lang, Brian Holden, and Joe Walker. It was produced by StarKid Productions at the Hoover Leppin Theater in Chicago in February of 2011, and a filmed version was released on YouTube in April of 2011. The concept began as a musical parody of the film Starship Troopers and was described by Darren Criss as, quote, The Little Mermaid meets aliens. Starship was StarKid's fourth musical and the first one not to be affiliated with University of Michigan.
Yeah, very fun.
I like this much better than Harry Potter musical. And I think some of that is because you can see they've kind of like grown and developed as writers and performers, but also because I don't care that much about Harry Potter.
Well, I want to say this, something that struck me very quickly and early on about Starship was, well, you know, I love puppets. I've made a bunch and I knew that the show involved puppets, but honestly, they are way more intricate than I anticipated. And it's just like, pretty much as soon as Bug started singing, I Want to Be, I was like, just immediately started smiling. I was like, oh, I'm going to love this.
That's why I've been saying for a long time, yeah. You have to watch this.
And it's so good. It's so funny. And it's like, something that also struck me very quickly as well is that, yes, this is very loosely based on the idea of Starship Troopers. It's nothing like any of the film, the movie, or there's a cartoon series, I think. It's not based on any of that. It's literally based on Starship Troopers in, like, name only or, like, concept only, which I think is very smart because I think they learned their lesson from Harry Potter musical and was like, okay, we're going to base it on the idea of this, but we're not going to use any, like, characters from the movie and we're not going to do, you know, anything like specifically related to it, which is why I think they have so many references to other sci-fi movies and stuff and other sci-fi properties to try to like, for one, distance themselves from the original IP, but then also this musical feels like a love letter to sci-fi.
Yeah.
Which I also really appreciate because I think sci-fi is probably the hardest genre to make into a musical just because because of technical limitations, not because of like concept or idea really. I mean, like, cause like I can think of things like we have plenty of musicals that are based on like horror things like that. But I feel like sci-fi is just a really difficult medium to adapt or concept to adapt into a stage musical. And I think this is done very, very well.
I agree. Let me hit you with the summary.
Hit me with that summary.
Oh, first I gotta yawn.
I'm going to revisit this, the thing I was talking about. Let's do a summary.
Okay. Starship is a science fiction comedy musical centered on Bug, an insect-like alien living on Bug World, who struggles to fit into his communal bug society. He spends most of his free time exploring the wreckage of a crashed spaceship and dreams of leaving his mundane hive life and becoming a Starship Ranger. When a pod crashes on Bug World, human Starship Ranger and total ditz February is blinded and captured by the bugs who want to implant bug eggs into her body. Meanwhile, another group of ragtag Starship Rangers is sent by the boss's son, Junior, to rescue February, including the traumatized Commander Up and his Rambo-esque sidekick, Taz, self-proclaimed country pumpkin, Tootsie Noodles, and the robot Mega Girl. Bug rescues February, who thinks Bug is a human because she cannot see, and smitten, Bug uses this opportunity to pretend to be a Starship Ranger. Because interacting with humans is against the hive rules, Bug is forced to team up with outsider Pinsir, who helps him telepathically take over a human's body and join the Starship Rangers on their ship. Little do they all know that Junior is not just a Nepo baby, but actually evil, and the son of the evil Dr. Spaceclaw, who plans to take bug eggs back to Earth to create a bug army. The Starship Rangers go back down to Bug World, where Bug tries to tell February who he really is, and Junior teams up with Pinsir, who only wants to eat human brains. In an epic battle, Bug defeats Pinsir and kills his human body and returns to his bug body in the hive, just in time to stop Junior from destroying everything. The Bug Overqueen appoints Bug as an ambassador for Bug World. Bug reveals his true identity to the other Rangers and February, who decides she loves Bug even though she finds bugs disgusting. Also, Tootsie Noodles and Mega Girl get married. The end.
That's pretty concise
for a 3-hour musical. That was as small as I could make it.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so I'm just gonna revisit what I said then. It surprised me at the quality of production, as far as like considering this is a bunch of like essentially amateurs just putting on this show that they wrote. But it's really impressive, like what they've done and like how the puppets work and how all that, all these things together. And like everyone plays multiple parts, you know, they do all the different things. And like I said, sci-fi is a really difficult genre to adapt in musical theater. And this is done incredibly well. It's the perfect amount of like 1960s sci-fi campiness. That makes it like really entertaining, but they have all these references to like other franchises and other like sci-fi things. It's so funny and just really, really good. I really enjoyed watching this. I had a great time.
Yeah, I think I hadn't rewatched it in a long time, but I remember I haven't really followed Team Star Kid that much since I graduated college, but I remember by the time I knew about them, like this was already out, so I watched this right away, and then Holy Musical Batman was like the following spring. Mm-hmm. So I was in on that stuff like right as it was coming out, and of all of the things that they produced, for as long as I was paying attention really to what they were doing, this was still my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it, because it wasn't the first one that I saw. It's not like that, you know, like when you have like your favorite cast because they're the ones that you knew.
Right.
This was, I just always liked this one the best. And I think maybe it's because it's a great example of a high quality, low tech show.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing really super fancy going on stage. I mean, the mechanics of the puppets are pretty cool, but there's nothing that requires a lot of like motorized set pieces or...
Mm-mm,
they use a projector to play some pre-recorded video, but like besides that, it's not super tech heavy.
Right.
But what is there is, I think, extremely high quality
and very effective.
And for a group of mostly brand new college graduates, pretty cool.
I will say, you were very right about me liking Kick It Up a Notch. I really. Was so good. Just like, again, like I said, I was really impressed by the quality of puppets and all the performances. And that's the thing I love about puppetry and puppets in general, is that like you always, even if the performer is fully visible, you don't end up ever watching the performer. You're really only ever watching the puppet. And I think that's true for this show as well. Like I was never, I found myself always watching when someone was talking, watching the puppet. I'm not watching the person. Like I very rarely will like watch the person who's like like piloting the puppet in any sense. Even when they're wearing like the costume of another character that they're playing, like it doesn't even really matter that much to me. It's just like, oh, I was so engrossed in what I was seeing that I was like, it didn't bother me at all.
Yeah, I think this time through, because I had seen it before, I was trying to pay more attention to the actors. And I noticed mm-hmm. that in the framing of this filmed version that you can watch, right from the very beginning, they zoom right in on Bug the puppet so that you mm-hmm. can't see Joey Richter, the actor's face, in the first couple mm-hmm. shots. And I think that just sets you up to pay attention to the puppets the whole time.
That's just smart.
After about the first 30 seconds or so, everything zooms out a little bit. So then you can see everyone pretty much the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I still didn't really want to watch the actors. I wanted to watch the puppets.
That's the puppets, right? Yeah, for sure. It's so fun. And like, I really like too how the Bug puppet is different than some of the other ones. Because like his mouth moves differently than like the other generic Bug puppets that we see. There's also like the two-dimensional ones mm-hmm. that just kind of shift around, and like they talk and their mouths don't move, but doesn't really matter. But I do have to say that the pincer puppet is the coolest.
It's so
one
cool.
It's so cool. It's like, I think it's got at least four puppeteers mm-hmm. and the actor who plays Tootsie Noodles voices Pincer as well, and he's fantastic. I don't even know his name. What is, I mean,
Dylan actually, Saunders.
Dylan Saunders, he's so good.
This is one of the things about this show. So I think part of why I liked this one so much is because my whole freshman class, we were all obsessed with Harry Potter musical, and his vocal abilities, I don't know if it's just that this was written for him and it was just better suited to him, but mm-hmm. I think he improved a lot as a vocalist from Harry Potter musical to this one, and I was always annoyed by the like little imperfections in the recording of Harry Potter musical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
Like he was funny as Dumbledore, but vocally was okay, not great. And this just like sparkled.
He's fantastic in this. He's so great. You know, it's just, and like, you know, him and like the creative staging and lighting with that scene as well, just makes it so much more watchable, especially with like everything is pretty much top light down. Like you don't see the like Dylan at all. Mm. You just like his hands are up and he's like moving Pincer's mouth, but you don't really see him. And he's in full Tootsie Noodles costume and you don't really notice.
Yeah.
It's great. It's so good. And then the other actors that are controlling his big pincers, you know, and like essentially like that whole puppet is like one guy's working the head and mouth. And then there's one person on each of the claws. And then one person's in the back just holding up the tail, basically. He has like a big scorpion tail. So there's minimum four puppeteers, but it works really, really well.
Yeah.
When it comes out, you're like, oh, this is cool. when they introduce that character and they come in. And just like, I think because of like the different variety of these puppets that you're seeing, like you don't really think about like, you got like once you're kind of in it, you're in it. And there's like not a lot of, there's nothing watching it that took me completely out of it. Like we're in this world and it's just kind of this goofy sci-fi world that is, it's very believable just the way that they operate it, because all the bugs are bright and colorful and they're all kind of cartoony and the people look like people. You know, so it's just kind of, it just is what it is. But I think once you buy in, it's like you're in.
Yeah, the world it feels very cohesive throughout. Mm-hmm. And again, there's nothing super complicated about the scenic design, but I really like it. There was some discussion that I saw about whether or not the bugs are too cute.
Really?
Should they have been more ugly or scary? Because there's that whole song about how they're supposed to be hideous.
Yeah, hideous creatures.
Yes. I don't remember any names of songs. Truthfully, the only song that sticks in my head is Kick It Up a Notch.
Well, I also have the song list just pulled up in front of me. Well. So there's that does help. But I do remember like the names of the songs. Yeah.
There's discussion, I guess. The person, let me see if I can find this thread. I found a Reddit thread. Apparently, a lot of the concept for Starship was Joe Walker's brainchild. And apparently he wanted the bugs to look more like real bugs.
Mm.
And this Reddit thread that I found, it's very polarized. Some people are like, I love Starship. It's the best. It's like, it's got so much heart and like the style is great. And then there are lots of people who are talking about all the flaws in it. Like, well, it would have been so much better if the bugs had been really ugly for hideous creatures. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I really like the design.
I do too.
I think that's part of the parody is that it's very cute. Like, to me, the design is very much like an homage to the other big puppet shows. Like, Roach is definitely an Avenue Q puppet.
Mm-hmm, for sure. He's a hand puppet, yeah.
Pinsir is definitely, to me at least, a reference to the dragon from Shrek.
Mm-hmm,
and
sure.
I'm trying to think, like, this was well before Frozen, but I'm trying to think what else had that style puppet, because Bug is the same style puppet as Olaf, just like a praying mantis, kind of.
It's the same style as Timon in Lion King. Well.
Okay. I forgot there's puppets in Lion King.
Yeah, it's like, Lion King is like all puppets.
I know, whoops. I always forget about Lion King. Sorry, Julie Taymor.
I'm sure I've talked to you about this before, but I did an independent study on puppetry in college because I was working on a show that had a lot of puppets in it. And the style of puppet that Roach is called a hand and rod, because the facial features are controlled by your hand, and then it has a rod that you use to move the arms. And essentially, every puppet in the show is a modified version of that, except that they are human-sized, really. Like, some of the side bug characters are all, like, essentially human-sized, but they are operated, their heads are operated with a human hand, and then the arms are on rods. Bug is that way. Though Bug is a hand and rod, because other than his mouth, like, your hand doesn't make the, like, sock puppet hand movement. It's more of it's a trigger, because his little mandibles move in and out. So Bug is similar, but he's not the same kind of, he's the same kind of puppet. He's just, his operation is different. And then Pinsir is just a multi-person puppet. So I can't remember if there's a specific term for that, but that is what I know, that it's a many puppeteered character, like Audrey 2 in Little Shop, the dragon in Shrek, and King Kong. Except King Kong is also a special case as well, because King Kong had animatronics. But yeah, puppets are cool. They're fun. I like them. And I will agree with you too, that I feel like the designs are really, I think they're perfect what they are. I don't think there needs to be any change. Like, it does not bother me that they're not uglier. Because I think, like, well, they're bugs. Yeah. People who, like, you, human beings come in and see, you know, human-sized bugs, they're going to freak out and be like, oh, they're hideous and scary. And then the bugs have the same reaction to the humans. So,
right. Well,
makes sense to me.
I see the argument for it. I found the post. It's Reddit user Libby Goods. Says, having the bugs be a little bit more creepy and a bit gory looking really would have driven home the quote otherness that Bug feels when he's comparing himself to humans. It also really would have done a better job at amping up the tensions between the bugs and the humans. Imagine hideous creatures if they were these squelchy, twitching bugs. Ugh, yuck, I love it. And then, like, continues on about some other stuff. If you want the gross interspecies kiss, then let it happen between Bug and Bugette when she dies. She's just given birth, laying on the floor, torn open and wet, and Bug leans in and kisses her tenderly, then stands up and spits a mouthful of bug jam onto the floor. Ah, romantic. I guess it comes down to what you view Starship as. Is it a horror retelling of The Little Mermaid, or is it a Disney retelling of Starship Troopers?
I feel like it's the latter.
I think I like this argument, but because Bug is a bug and Bug's the central character, I feel like the humans need to be uglier and gross.
That's fair. I think it's very fair. And I definitely could see where the poster is coming from, but I also disagree. I don't think they need to be uglier. I think they're fine the way they are, you know, because I think it's one thing to have one character that is ugly and it stays like very like grotesquely ugly throughout the show than have like multiple characters be like hard to watch, if that makes sense.
It seems like you're thinking of something specific here.
I'm trying to find a more specific example. The first thing that comes to my mind is Hunchback, but like he's not really in prosthetics, right? So, but I'm trying to think of like a movie or something that has a more grotesque character that, oh, it's like Frankenstein's monster, right? The creature in Frankenstein. It's like he's this horrible, grotesque-looking creature, monster thing. But if everybody looks that way, then it's a harder thing to watch overall, I feel like. Like if everybody was a creature as opposed to just one character. I don't know if I'm making a valid argument or not.
I don't know if I agree with that either, because I feel like if everyone's ugly, then you just get used to it.
That's fair. That's true. I get that. I can concede that.
I don't know. I like the design as it is, and I like that some of them are like a little fuzzy, and I especially love their eggshell semi-gloss eyes. I don't know what it is about the finish on their little puppet eyeballs, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah, just like the dead kind of like no like lifeless bug eyes.
Yeah, I really like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah,
I think shiny well. Would have been too much.
Yeah,
and flat wouldn't have been enough.
Yeah, I think they have, I agree with that because, I mean, I can see too, like the argument, they look kind of cutesy, kind of Disney-fied, but they're not from like A Bug's Life, right? They don't look like the insects in A Bug's Life. They are uglier than that, I would say.
You seem like you're waiting for me constantly to justify your thoughts.
No, not necessarily. I'm just like, I don't know. I'm kind of just thinking out loud as we're talking about it, but that's how I don't know. That's how I feel.
What else do you want to talk about?
How do you feel about this show starting out with a video intro?
I think it sets up the sci-fi fine. It doesn't bother me.
Are there other shows you can think of that have that kind of exposition right at the beginning?
I mean, every show has exposition at the beginning.
Well, I know that, but I just mean like in that way.
Let's ask the internet.
Okay.
Prince of Egypt, maybe? Sunset Boulevard, The Revival.
Okay. I feel like that American Idiot starts out with a video, but I don't think it's like a super long thing that actually has a lot of exposition or anything in it.
Apparently Rock of Ages?
It doesn't start out with a video. It starts out with the recording.
Apparently recording. Lots of touring and regional productions use video.
Oh, in Rock of Ages?
In Rock of Ages, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I'm not saying that it bothered me. I'm just was like, oh, this is an interesting way to kind of get you into it. Because it's not typical to do that. Sometimes you just, I feel like a lot of the time with musicals, you're just kind of thrown in and be like, okay, now figure it out. But I think it actually benefits this show. Because the concept is so funky and it is a sci-fi show, that having that just really helps you kind of get more into it quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah. You agree?
Yeah.
Okay. all right. Anyway, it's moving on. So the music I think is really fun. I think it's kind of a little bit like kind of standard kind of pop musical fare that we get a lot of today. But it doesn't bother me that it's, you know, like that. I think I Want to Be is a really good intro song. Sets up everything pretty well. Sets up the premise. I know that is its purpose. But it's really fun. And there's lots of references to like all kinds of different stuff and all the different songs as well.
Such as?
Well, it's just like I was saying before, there's a lot of references to like other franchises, like different sci-fi things, like things I picked up on that were referenced in either in dialogue or in lyrics were like they made references to Transformers and like the Terminator and Metal Gear and Alien and all kinds of stuff. It just was really fun. Kick It Up a Notch has some really fun lyrics in it. I feel like listening to it, I was like, oh, that's really fun. But no, I don't. Now I can't find it. I feel like I have to listen to it. I'm not going to worry about doing that. I honestly didn't write a ton of notes. I was enjoying really watching the show, so I didn't write a ton of stuff down other than like, oh, that's cool. Kicking Up a Notch is my favorite song in the show from everything that I remember, but I don't think there's a bad one in it. There's not very many, considering it's a musical. There's less than 10, which I find that kind of interesting as well, but it also doesn't feel like it takes a long time to get from song to song. It feels like it takes a little while to get from like musical number to musical number, but the show itself doesn't feel like it's like running super long. What?
That's really interesting because I disagree.
Oh, okay.
I mean, from a music standpoint, so music and lyrics were all written by Darren Criss.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get the hype about Darren Criss as a performer. Like, he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But as a musical theater writer, I think this shows that he's really actually very good.
Sure.
There's a lot of... You said pop musical earlier, and I also disagree with that. I don't think it's a pop musical. It feels very much like it was written by musical theater people who are very well versed in and love musical theater.
Okay.
And so it feels very much like a musical theater piece to me, but the lyric writing I find particularly impressive for a like 20 something recent graduate.
Mm-hmm.
Kick It Up a Notch, for example. It starts with scales and exoskeletons, why they pale in comparison to a body that's covered up in skin.
Yeah.
Like all rhyming. And then mm-hmm. he uses a lot of wraparound rhymes in
yes.
throughout the show, which I really like. The next lyric is, we get rid of those antennae, give you hair and clothes, and then I add two eyes and a nose.
That's what I was looking
and
for.
My boy, that is only the begin, which rhymes back with skin, the beginning.
Yeah.
Yes,
that's what I was looking for.
It's right at the beginning.
Thank you. I know. I couldn't hear it in my head.
But he rhymes a lot of words that are, I feel, overused by musical theater writers who are not great writers, but in ways that makes them feel fresh again.
Like what?
Let me see if I can find one in here. I mean, they rhyme a lot of things with notch, which I would say is not a normal word to rhyme. Maybe it's in the first number I was thinking of. Yeah, in I Want to Be, one of the verses, and I'll admit it's all in my head, but who says it can't be real? They may be far away, but I can safely say it doesn't change the way I feel. Like, real and feel get rhymed a lot, mm-hmm. but that feels fresh.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
They may be far away, but I can safely say.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also words that are not standard rhyme type words, like the words atmosphere and disappear are rhymed.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's the sci-fi genre that helps, like, you get some of those words you wouldn't normally get in a rhyme.
Yeah, probably.
Like,
I mean,
what do you rhyme with alive? Not hive.
Not hive. That's true.
But they get to in this show because they're bugs.
Yeah.
I have a newfound appreciation. I guess I didn't realize that he wrote all the music, that Darren Criss wrote all the music and lyrics for this because he wasn't in it. They had like started the show or started production, and then he got Glee.
Right.
And left. And so I guess the rumor somewhere I read, I think, was that he was originally supposed to play Pinsir and Tootsie Noodles.
Yeah, because I actually if you look on the Wikipedia page, it actually says that he was supposed to play Tootsie Noodles and or Pinsir. So
I'd be curious to hear him sing it, because I feel like it feels a lot like it's written for their voices. And I think that's some of why this show in particular shows growth from the previous shows they had done. Like, Very Potter Musical was very scrappy and like, mm-hmm. we're a bunch of college kids and we're doing a thing because it's fun. And
right.
then I don't know if you're familiar at all with Should I Censor This Title? Me and My Dick. I only ever watched it once. I think I made it all the way through, but it's the kind of, from what I remember, like dirty, raunchy college show that, like, even as a full 18-year-old, like, away at college, I was like, I am definitely an adult. And I was alone in my dorm room watching it, and I knew that nobody else knew I was watching it, and I still felt really dirty and icky about it.
Yeah, that's
like
fair.
Just constant, like there's a giant penis is one of the characters
on stage. Like, yeah.
So, which is fine. There's a place for that type of humor somewhere.
Yeah.
Sure. Not really my jam, but okay. And so then to go to this, it just feels very much like they've all mostly worked together enough to know each other, and like it feels like a lot of these songs were written for specific performers in mind, and it shows off their voices in ways that, like, the execution was worse in Very Potter Musical,
mm-hmm.
and this made everyone seem like a better performer. And of course, like, they probably did grow as performers in that time.
Oh, but yeah, I'm sure.
Additionally, I think a lot of this music was written for them. And as someone who did a big project where I wrote music for specific voices, it's fun to hear your friends sing songs that you wrote for them because you know it's going to sound good in their voice.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I definitely noticed the increase in vocal quality from Very Potter Musical as well, particularly with Joey and Dylan. Joey Richter and Dylan Saunders. I thought they both sounded like, I was surprised when Dylan Saunders started singing.
Yeah.
Pinsir. I was like, oh, wow, this is really good. You know, so, but yeah, for sure. And I don't know. I mean, I know that you know more about music than I do, and I don't try to hide that, but like, if you're saying all these things, then I know it's true. That's kind of how I look at it. You know, and I do, like, I know I always talk about how I really appreciate like a really good harmony, and I found it very funny, and I Want to Be where they had like harmonic buzzing behind Bug when he was singing. I was like, that's fun. I like that a lot. There's only one moment in the show where I felt was kind of sour as far as like vocal. And for me in particular, it is from The Way I Do.
It's February.
Yeah.
I'm curious about her because was she cast in other Star Kid things?
I don't know.
I can't remember.
Apparently she's in Holy Musical Batman.
I've seen Holy Musical Batman and I don't remember who she plays in that. But I don't know if there was something else going on. Oh, she's multiple characters in Holy Musical Batman.
Mm-hmm. Including Catwoman, I think.
BFA acting and dance. That makes sense. Also, not from University of Michigan with the rest of the gang.
Yeah, she's from Chicago. But it wasn't necessarily just her. It was specifically also just, there's just the part of the song where, Bug and February are singing together.
Yeah, no, it's her though.
It's her though, because he goes like low for like a low harmony, and it's like, this is something sounded off.
It's her. I wonder if there was something going on the day it was recorded, or, I mean, maybe, truthfully, when I see instances like this, and I don't, do I say this out loud? Is this an inside thought? I wonder if the people in charge of casting were like, hot blonde girl. I want to hang out with her because she's a hot blonde girl, not because she's a good singer.
Sure.
It happens. But I just feel like surely there had to have been someone else to play a hot blonde girl who could also sing.
Potentially.
So or maybe that's why February doesn't sing much at all.
Maybe.
That was some of the other discussion. Actually, was like the February plot line is too big. It didn't need, like, why did he need to fall in love with her?
That's fair.
And I think there would be more discussion about it if the main character was female, because girls are always like, why does it have to be about a man? I was pursuing my dream. Mm-hmm. And then I fell in love and now it's all about love. But like, really, it's about my dream. And right. So I think the same is true opposite. But yeah, like, why does it have to be about a girl now? All he wanted to be was a Starship Ranger. There just happens to be a hot blonde walking around.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, like, he does save her life, but, like, it does kind of feel like kind of shoehorned in and unnecessary that happens at all. Just because, like, yeah, like, I would have been fully happy if he just, you know, just became a Starship Ranger.
Well, and I think if you're really into that romance, like, the Mega Girl Tootsie Noodles romance is way better.
Yeah.
As far as just storyline, so.
Yeah, that's very true. And also very funny. So, I agree.
The opening number and Kick It Up a Notch are the ones that stick with me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the big romance ballad in Act Two. I don't even remember what it's called. And that's how little I care is to like flip to the other tab and look up what the song is called. Because it's just not super memorable. In fact, when I was rewatching it, I watched it twice today. The second time I watched it through, I watched it 1.5 speed. And it, the only reason I noticed it was sped up is because their vibratos were all too fast.
Right.
But otherwise, it could have been 50% faster.
I gotcha.
And it would have been fine. And it still feels like a ballad at that speed.
Yeah. The Way I Do. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, you know, whatever the romance song is.
That one. Sure. Yeah.
Again.
Yeah, it's the two couple singing
I
together.
I care
yeah.
so little about that song that I didn't bother to click over to the other tab and look it up.
I gotcha.
Again, I don't think 9 songs is too few for this show. I think the book is probably 50 pages too long.
Gotcha.
So I think I said this earlier, but when you watch the videos on YouTube, it totals up to like 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. And apparently the live performances they gave was like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And they cut a bunch out. And that's the thing that the creators don't like. Apparently nobody who worked on the show liked this show.
Really?
That it was too long and it was really hard and like physically demanding on the performer. So apparently sure. nobody had fun doing it. And I think, again, clearly the show was written by people who know and love musical theater.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problems with the show are in the book, and probably that 4 people wrote the book, and it's 4 people who were all friends who were writing for a larger group of like friends and colleagues and former classmates who are putting on the show together, and they're trying to incorporate as many ideas as possible. And when you're working with a group of people who you love and you like value their input and you like all of their writing, then everything becomes precious and you don't want to cut anything. And it does have a lot of great jokes. I don't remember it feeling long the first couple of times I watched it when I was younger, but today mm-hmm. it was like, wow, it's still go. Like, I really thought Kick It Up a Notch was the end of Act One in my memory.
And
it's not.
Feels like it should be.
It's not.
It
goes on
no.
for quite a bit after that.
Yeah.
And then about halfway through Act Two, I was like folding laundry and doing some other stuff while it was playing. And I was like, oh, it's still going? Like, how much further does it have to go? Because yeah. there's a lot here. So, but there, I mean, there's lots of good jokes. There's like featured moments for everyone in the cast. I just think that they were all young and everyone loved each other and nobody knew how to cut things. And to be fair, I think most of the problems in professional theater with musicals is the book. That's mm-hmm. it feels like it should be the easiest thing to do. Because right. everyone's a human and you know how people talk and like, I can write a script, but actually book writing for a musical is really hard.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time you have very little time to do what you need to do.
Right.
Else you have a 3-hour long musical with 9 songs.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I think that isn't like an inherent problem with this production. And like, I understand it too being like pretty physically demanding. There's so many moving parts to it that I could see that being really difficult, but it is like the parts that I watched the whole thing, but the parts that stick out the most to me are very memorable and very fun. Though, yes, the Act One ends with Status Quo, which is fine. Like, you can't, and the thinking about it, like trying to like improve the show, it would just be like just rewriting the book and like tightening it up. Cause I think this, all the songs are perfectly fine. You know, there's nothing there that would have to change at all, but You know, yeah, that definitely would be it. Because there are, like, if you go on YouTube and you will go to watch this show, if you watch the Team Star Kid playlist, if you just go to their official one and watch it, it's broken down, you know, like Act 1, Part 1, Act 1, Part 2, blah, blah, blah. And there are just full sections of the show that have no singing in them at all. Like full, like 10 to 15 minute sections of the show that don't have any singing in them. Which isn't like inherently bad, but is curious to me as like it being a musical, I guess.
I don't know how much of that comes from Darren Criss not being a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be curious about that. But I don't feel like there's too little music. I just think the book is too much.
Sure.
And watching it now, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but watching it now, I know exactly what I would change to tighten it up. And I don't think it would have been that hard to do.
What is that?
So some of the things I would have done, I would make Kick It Up a Notch the end of Act 1 and mm-hmm. make Status Quo the beginning of Act 2.
Sure.
But then I would cut a lot of stuff. I think the discussion about pulling February back to being more of a secondary character, like Specs and the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Just like minimizing that romance. A lot of the scenes with the other Starship Rangers just go on too long. And watching it at 1.5 speed, it was like they could have just tightened up the scenes. And I get that like a lot of what they're doing is fan service type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like Commander Up, I think we went way too far into his backstory to yeah. put in specific details that would get a laugh.
Right.
And sure, that's fun, but like...
Yeah, you can tighten that up, though. We gotta
cut stuff down. Yeah. And I mean, like, the other two, I didn't even mention a bunch of characters in my summary, because they're like Bugette is funny, mm-hmm. but doesn't really serve a plot point at all, except to save Bug at the end.
Right.
Which could have been Roach.
Yeah. That's true, yeah.
And I wonder how much of it is like, well, it would be really fun if every actor had a human character and a bug character. So mm-hmm. we added some extra humans. I don't think there's really any extra bugs except for Bugette, maybe. The Mosquito Brothers. They're mm-hmm. That's all a unit, so that makes sense.
Right. And the Over Queen has to be there because that's a plot point.
Right.
And Pinsir.
But yeah, Specs and who's the other guy?
Crayonder.
Is that a joke I'm missing?
I don't know. I don't really, if it's a joke, I don't get it.
Okay. I was trying to figure out, maybe it's an inside joke, or I don't know if it's a reference to Starship Troopers that I'm missing. I'm a fake fan. But yeah, I wonder some of that. I think I'm imagining the rehearsal, like creative rehearsal process, mm-hmm. and people being like maybe one person is saying, oh, you know, I think we should cut this scene down. And then someone else saying, no, I love that scene so much. It's so funny.
Yeah.
In the way that people who love doing a thing do. I mean, we're working with high schoolers, so it's different for sure than
right.
like college graduates from the top programs in the country. But still, if your prefrontal cortex isn't developed, it's easy to like get trapped in the like, but it's so funny.
Yeah.
And it is, there are a lot of great jokes in the book, which I think is how it gets away with being so long.
Yeah. And I think that's probably true because there are a lot of things that like I said, a lot of these references come and they come hard and fast in a lot of these scenes where there's like just dialogue. But like probably so, yeah. But I still think there's got to be a way to try to condense it. Like if you said if you cut Bugette completely, it doesn't detract anything really. And if you just kind of like, I don't know if you necessarily cut any of the human characters per se, but just like trying to tighten it up. It's like I'd have to rewatch it again to like really be like, oh, okay, this is where you can try to change some things here. But I think also removing the February bug romance plot, I think, would help because it's not necessary. You can still save her life, but like It doesn't really work for me either.
And I say all of that knowing that it has, I think it has a lot of heart and a lot of humor, 100%, and that saves it in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
It, and certainly in ways that the other Star Kid shows that I know, and granted, I don't know all of them, they don't. Like, there's something mm-hmm. different about this one compared to the other ones.
Yeah, it's like, it's weird. Is it weird to say that if it feels even more magical than a Harry Potter musical? Like, there's something about it that's just, like, it's special.
Yeah.
There's something that, like, and, like, I haven't watched a lot of other Star Kid stuff either, but it's, like, something about this musical in particular is, it stands out in a very particular, I don't know if it's the concept or if it's the design or what.
I think it's something about, like, where it falls in the timeline for me, that it's, like, you can still see where they came from, but you start mm-hmm. to see the glimpses of where they're going.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. This one, of all of the Star Kid shows that I know, this is the one that I like the best.
And I can definitely see why that is. I had a great time watching it. And, like, some of the, you know, longer scenes didn't really bother me that much. But then I don't know. I was like, when are we going to... I wish there was more singing in it. Mm. You know, because it's a musical. But, like, you know, that's kind of really my only thing with it. I think that I think it's performed well, but I can understand it being, like, it's really long. Because there's a lot of dialogue. And, yes, it's like, I can compare... probably where Star Kid was at writing this show when to an experience I had in college where my school attempted to do an original play based on the Scarlet Letter. And so, like, everyone in the cast was given a copy of the original book. And, like, I was a set designer, so I was given that. And I had a co-set designer. We worked together, talked to the director, did all that stuff. But talking to my friends who were cast in the show and getting all kind of figuring all that out, they all read the book and they all were like trying to like try to condense things down. But the problem that they were running into was that Hester, who's the main character, wound up getting almost the least amount of stage time because all the other characters were giving exposition and like doing all these different things. And so it's kind of a testament to me to like, it's hard to, when you're in something and you're working on it, it's hard to see exactly what the intention is or where you're going, trying to go, I guess. Because of like, okay, well, what can we do? What should we not do? And I think when you're in it, it's just hard to find that balance. So you kind of almost need an outside person to come in and like edit in some way. And while I think Starship has done really well, it probably could have done with, you know, a couple more passes to just look at everything overall and try to trim some of the fat.
Yeah.
Which is something that I like to try to do when I'm working on a project. It's like, hey, this is what I've done. I've written, like if I've written something, like this is what I've done, I'll pass it off to somebody else to read and see, like, you know, ask me questions like, you know, well, okay, well, why is this plot point occurring here? Or why does this character even exist? Things like that. And then either justify it or cut it. But I think that comes more of like just like the process of just writing in general.
Well, and I think especially when you're young and or inexperienced, it's easy to be too precious about everything. Like it's hard to cut because it feels like you've failed in some way, even though it's part of the process. And mm-hmm. then particularly as a performer, like, at least in my experience, actors are really selfish about stuff. And they're like, but this is my big moment. We can't cut my big moment, even if it doesn't serve the story. And so you have to have mm-hmm. a director or like one person who is steering the ship.
Right.
And kind of being the singular vision. Like there has to be one person making decisions who's looking at it from above and zoomed out.
Mm-hmm.
Because actors are all trained to delve into their character no matter how small it is and like build this world for the character. Mm-hmm. And so they've already done all of that work, but the audience is never going to see a lot of that stuff. So the director right. has to know when to make those decisions. And that's a very difficult thing to learn how to do, to be like, I wrote this thing and it's not working, or I wrote all this stuff and it's really great, but it's not serving.
Right.
And so it has to go, even though there's not mm-hmm. necessarily anything wrong with this writing.
For sure. You know, which ironically enough reminds me of something else that my alma mater does pretty consistently, is they do this big show at the end of the year or in the spring where they sing. And usually there are groups of...
Guess where he went to school, everyone.
There's the show is put together with multiple groups of students coming together and like creating their own show based on or like their own story based using popular songs or just songs of the time. And typically these groups will have around four directors or representatives from everybody. And the shows that had the most success were always headed by one person, and everyone else worked for that one person. Like what you're saying, like how a director should operate, as far as like, you need to put one person in charge who is the final say on all creative decisions, writing, all that stuff. And by putting that person in charge, it kind of keeps all the other creatives kind of in check. At least that's how I look at it. But that's why like the hierarchy of theater exists. That's why I feel like, you know,
I don't think a lot of outsiders understand that though. And a lot of people be like, well, theater's collaborative. And yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. But having a cohesive final product is more important than making sure not anyone's feelings get hurt along the way.
Right.
Like, that's something I've come up against in my classes, and also like as a director in an educational setting where like I've tried to give kids freedom to try to figure it out on their own, and they figured it out a little bit, but you know, like you want to honor everyone's like input as much as possible, and you want everyone to feel important and included, but like as a designer, sometimes the director is going to be like, I don't like that idea. Mm-hmm. And then you have to figure out what to do instead. Or like there have been times right. where as a director, I've been called a dictator, but it's like, we have to serve one vision and it's my turn to be in charge now. Right. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that's the hardest part of being a director, is not being seen as like necessarily the end all be all, despite the fact that when I'm working with students, that's kind of what I tell them, is like, as the set designer, I'm able to have creative freedom to work on what I see as a vision for the show. But ultimately, if you are directing the show, then you have the final say in what we do or what I do. Because if I bring an element to you that you don't like, then like I want you to change this. I'm like, okay, I got to figure out something else. I can't. I'm not gonna fight you on most of the things. I would say I don't think there's really anything I've ever like really fought for against you in that respect. There are definitely, I mean, I definitely have thoughts on lots of different things, but I'm trying not to, you know, share my thoughts on everything with you, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what I think. It's what you want. Or like you giving the kids, you know, the creative freedom to do what they want to do, but within the confines of what you want to see.
Yeah. I mean, I think like when I'm, one of the struggles that I face, I think in our current situation, is that when I'm directing, I am the youngest person on the team.
Yeah.
So for a while I wasn't the youngest person teaching performing arts, but now I am again. And I don't love that, because I feel like I don't get, or like I have to earn respect more sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I also, I mean, the patriarchy, but I often feel like I'm poo-pooed as a woman. So that's neither here nor there. I think, like, with this new class that I'm teaching, and with, like, it's all student led. And so having the kids do everything has been really good for them as far as a learning experience. And I've gotten mm-hmm. feedback from a lot of the kids where they, like, they come to me with issues of, like, hey, the actors are not off book and I set their deadline as off book. What do I do? Or, you know, so-and-so is committed to presenting this design by this date and I can't do my job until they've done their job. And, like, the kids kind of blindly accepting each other's ideas, because it's like, well, you're the props designer, so this is what the prop's going to be. You're the set designer, so this is the set. You're the costume designer, so this is the costume. And not, well, I'm the director, so I would like to see XYZ. And I don't, it's hard to vaguely talk about this because I'm not thinking of any specific examples, really, truthfully, students who are listening. I'm not thinking mm-hmm. of examples, and, like, no one, I'm not specifically trying to call anyone out, but it's been really interesting to watch them kind of navigate this balance of mutual respect, but also we do have to serve one person's vision. And also, right. like, sometimes things change along the way, and other people will contribute good ideas, and that will kind of change the trajectory, which is also okay. And it's been really hard to sit back and, like, watch them struggle when, as mm-hmm. a director, stage manager, actor, all the things, I am anticipating all the problems, and I would have fixed them before they became problems, but I can't because I just have to let them figure out the problems.
Right.
Which there were yeah. moments, like the day before opening, when I thought, well, I will change how I do this class completely next year because this is going to be a disaster, and then end up being fine. And so there's a part of me that's like, we should change all this so we avoid disaster. But also, I feel like the almost hitting disaster was really valuable learning. So,
right. Yeah.
Again, if you're affiliated with StarKid at all, and this was your experience, can you tell me? Because I would love to know if I'm right.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting to just think about, you know, this whole process of, like, what, you know, what the kids are going through with working on the show that they were working on in this class. And, like, you know, both you and I, because we're both kind of hanging out in there. Well, I'm kind of hanging out in there. You're the teacher, but just sitting here and, like, watching and seeing all these, yeah, these kind of roadblocks or different walls that they're hitting, and having, and I feel like us kind of having the restraint to be like, can't step in and help them because they need to figure it out.
Right. Yeah. This is the class where it's like, figure it out. If I were, mm-hmm. if it were like our after school show, and I were directing, then, like, absolutely I would step in, but...
Yeah, yeah, and it's the same for me. But, yeah, it's just, it's interesting to see, like, to really be a part of this process and see how everything puts together makes me wonder what it was like working on this show.
And I imagine it's all amplified because they were the ones creating the show as well. It's not like they licensed someone else's script and right. put on a show, which is what we did.
Right.
Yeah. I'm curious how much tensions were higher or like all of it. I'd be curious.
Yeah. I mean, it would make sense to me that if tensions were high, that of course no one had a great, had a fun time working on the show because everyone was mad
yeah,
at each other.
Yeah, that's some of it. But then also, like, the script, another, here's an issue with the book. Kick it up a notch. Mm-hmm. The everyone who's puppeteering Pinsir is on the starship.
Right.
The scene immediately after Kick It Up a Notch is all the humans. That's why they're all in their human costume, because sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're wearing black.
Right.
And they're all in that next scene. And so they mm-hmm. literally run off stage. I'm imagining run off stage, like, unbuckle the puppet, throw it on the ground, and then run back on as your other character.
Yeah.
That's poor book writing. That scene didn't need yeah. to be there.
Right.
You could have changed it. No wonder everyone's exhausted yeah. and angry. And I'm making a lot of assumptions here. I don't know what it was actually
sure,
like.
Sure, yeah, yeah. Right. But you're exactly right, though.
That should have been the Act 1 finale.
Yeah. Yeah. It's either that or you don't double cast those parts.
Well, and by all means, double cast the parts, because if you have too many actors, like, if you don't double cast the parts, then it's a high school production where you have 60 kids audition and you want to include as many as possible, right? You have right. like 30 bugs in a bug ensemble.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So doing the, what I will, I guess it's a Broadway thing too, but I always think of it as being a more off-Broadway thing where there's like 8 to 12 actors total and they're playing mm-hmm. all the characters. I like that better. I don't get to play that game a lot at the high right. school level, but that's okay.
Yeah.
But easily fixed. Just change easily your act fixed, break. Yeah. Cut down some of that nonsense about sitting on each other's laps.
Yeah. That's an incredibly long scene for like no reason.
I really think so much of it was inside jokes. Like the whole inside jokes about the Galactic League of Extraterrestrial Exploration.
Yeah.
The Glee.
Yeah.
And then like winking at Darren Criss in the audience.
Yeah. Yeah. Things like that. I did notice that as well. Just
it's a lot of like, can I make my co-stars break? And won't that be funny for the audience who all recognizes us?
Well, I will. There are a couple of moments where you kind of do see the actors break, and that is funny. Because I'm wondering too. It does make me also wonder how much of it is scripted and how much of it is improvised. Because if you're writing the show yourself, you kind of know where you can do those kind of things.
Yeah.
That's part of it as well. So because this is a Team Star Kid production, it's clearly not a Broadway show and probably never will be, essentially. But I think it would still be kind of fun to like dreamcast this in a way that's like, okay, this show is going to go Broadway or go off Broadway. We're going to put some big names in it. Who would you want to see playing what character?
I want to be one of the Mosquito Brothers so I can sing Kick It Up a Notch.
Okay.
And or Specs.
Yeah.
I'm not funny enough to be a Lauren Lopez character.
That's
as
fair.
We've established previously. I can sometimes do a fun voice, but I don't think I could pull off a Bugette.
Yeah, you don't think so?
And I remember when we were auditioning Very Potter Musical at my school, they were like picking people and they looked at me and they were like, you're not funny enough to be Draco Malfoy, Emily. And I was like, that's fair.
Well, I guess you have the awareness. So, something. I think you're funny.
Yeah, I'm a different kind of funny.
I'm funny
in person. I'm not really funny on stage. But I'm definitely not Lauren Lopez funny.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, I could never be a Taz, and I don't think I'm a Bugette. But I could sing Kick It Up a Notch.
Yeah, for sure. There you go.
Could sing some of those fun harmonies.
Let's just say that the show is officially going to go, I'll say off-Broadway. This is not really a Broadway style, a Broadway type of show. We're going to put famous names in it. Is there anyone in particular that you envision playing specific characters?
I think it would be fun for Darren Criss to be in it.
Yeah, I agree.
I'd be curious to hear him play Pinsir and Tootsie Noodles, but I actually want to see him play Junior.
That would be really fun. I would love to see Andrew Barth Feldman play Bug.
Oh.
Just to see what he would do. It's just a very typical kind of character for him. That's fair. Unless we want to get Jordan Fisher to come do it.
I don't know if I... I'm just having this thought right now, but has Jordan Fisher been in a comedy?
You know, I don't know.
I only ever think of him for serious roles.
I mean, I don't know. He wasn't that... He was what?
He was Duty in Grease Live. But...
Duty, yeah. I was trying to think of the character's name, yeah. But he was in that, which is like comedic, but like not the comic relief of that show. I don't know. Has Jordan Fisher done a straight comedy role before?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm trying to think. Dear Evan Hansen, Hades Town. Wasn't he in Moulin Rouge for a while?
Yeah. He was in Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, like, he's a serious man.
I guess so.
Oh no, this is a thing now.
What?
I want Milo Manheim to do it.
Okay, get Milo Manheim to play Bug.
Bug.
That'd be really fun. I'm honestly down for it.
I don't want this to be a thing. Because we're going to get like Journey to Bethlehem 2. And then we're going to have to watch that.
It's called The Second Coming? Journey to Bethlehem 2, The Second Coming?
I was just going to call it Journey to Bethlehem 2, Electric Boogaloo, but...
Oh, yeah, there you go.
There was no electricity in biblical times, so maybe...
No.
Analog Boogaloo.
I know you probably are going to hate this, but how would you feel about Alex Brightman playing Pinsir and Tootsie Noodles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's either that or like a Josh Gad type.
Sure, yeah. Josh Gad.
It's got to be somebody who sings really well and also can play the like country himbo.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Some of the jokes when he calls himself a country pumpkin. Your first name is what you do, and your second name is what you love. And that's why I call my dog Tootsie Noodles sometimes.
Okay, so we've got Milo Manheim as Bug. Alex Brightman is Tootsie Noodles / Pinsir.
And Darren Criss is Jr.
Is there an actor working today who has the comedic chops like Lauren Lopez has playing Taz and Bugette?
I'm totally coming up blank, but there has to be.
I'm sure. Yeah. TBD. I'm trying to think of any Broadway person, but could come up, end up being very surprised, you know?
Does Jenny Slate sing?
I don't know, but Jenny Slate would be really fun. I just don't know if she sings. Apparently she can sing.
Great.
She famously sang Fleetwood Mac's Landslide as Marcel the Shell.
I somehow never heard of that.
She can also be heard on the official soundtracks for The Lorax and various Bob's Burgers music albums.
I think part of why Lauren Lopez is so funny is because she's so tiny.
I think that's probably true.
And just like so much energy.
I mean, she was Draco Malfoy for a reason. I don't know. I don't know if it's rude to say necessarily, but you could get any slew of actors to play any of the other characters in the show.
Yeah, you know? I was trying to think of who the perfect February would be. Mm-hmm. But there's so many good choices. And I think it would be even more fun if February was played by someone who's way too old to be February.
Like Jane Krakowski?
Yeah, or I was thinking Kristen Chenoweth.
Oh, yeah. That'd be really fun, actually.
Like, I need someone who's like 50, 60 to be playing February. 20. Somehow funnier to
That's
me.
Way funnier. It's pretty funny.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Actually, you know who I think should play February, though? Nicole Scherzinger, just for fun.
It would be pretty funny. While you were doing that, I found Dylan Saunders' website, and I'm watching his reel.
Oh, yeah?
Well, and he's got some vocal stuff posted, too, and man, his voice is pretty. Aw, do I have a new Broadway crush? Maybe.
Well, I mean, I feel like the other option for casting the show is just bringing everybody from StarKid back and putting them off Broadway.
Yeah, and they've done stuff like that before.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that would have the most appeal.
Yeah, probably.
I think every show they've done, they've had a sold out run because they do very limited runs. But.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this show only ran for like 2 weekends, a couple weeks, yeah. I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know who else to cast.
Yeah, I don't either. That's the other option, is just bring StarKid back to do it themselves.
Yeah. I think that's some of StarKid's thing, like, because lots of other theater companies, like from a theater kid perspective, lots of professional theater is not filmed or released widely for people to see. And so that's where the theater kids of today and their slime tutorials. And anytime, like as a teacher, I feel the need to sort of condemn the slime tutorials. And the kids go, but that's the only way I'll ever get to see it. And I do understand that impulse. I mean, we watch our fair share of them to produce mm-hmm. this podcast. So anyway, right. StarKid, like, intentionally writing musical theater things that they can then release publicly for everyone to see feels like it's including a lot of those theater kids who don't have access to good theater where they live, mm-hmm. potentially. And then I think they kind of came to fame right at that time. Like, it makes me think of the, like, when Tumblr was big on the internet, and the internet felt much smaller and more personal, and before we had the term for parasocial relationships,
mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of where they were at with their audience, and everyone watching got very easily attached to all of these actors for their performances. And so bringing those actors back over and over again just continues to appeal to that audience, which, you know, then you fall into the trap of, like, do we have to specifically create fan service content?
Sure.
But also that's how they're able to produce theater.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong. It's an interesting, like, niche to be a part of, where you've established this thing and you know you have a very dedicated fan base. So are you just making content for that fan base, or are you making it for everybody?
Right. Like, how loyal is your fan base, where you make right. content for yourself, or else just, like, content that you think is good and put it out mm-hmm. into the world? And if it doesn't appeal to the fans, like, do you have the kind of fans who will turn on you?
Yeah. I feel like, and, like, you know, I can't speak for everybody, but I feel like that if you were a fan of Team StarKid, you're probably going to pretty much like anything that they do. I don't think they had the type of fan base that would just turn on them, if that makes sense. But I could be wrong. It's to me, that seems unlikely.
I would hope so. I don't know. I mean, I think I really like the work of theirs that I know. I'm not, like, a diehard fan, obviously, but I'm also right. the type of person in general where, like, even if I don't love something that an artist I like created, like, I will continue to support it because they're the ones doing it. And I think that's right. part of that parasocial relationship is, like, oh, these people that I sort of know and love made a thing. I don't know. And I kind of wonder if it's different because, like, the theater kids tend to be a different little cult of people than the rest of the world.
That's also
it's
very
not
true,
like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know, other influencers, like the makeup artists who are cutting each other's throats about stuff. The theater kids are just like, we're weird and we all love each other.
But, you know, is a fun group to be a part of.
Usually.
But when the kid shows up who wants to cut your throat, you're like, nah, kid. And you just get him out of there.
They usually find their own way to the door. You want to rate it?
Yeah, let's rate this thing.
You go first this time.
So I think overall this show, it, like, we've talked about a lot of its flaws, but I do really enjoy it. And I'm actually going to plan on watching it again probably pretty soon. Just because I enjoyed watching it so much. And so it does, like, I think the concept is very fun. It's very difficult to pull off this genre of musical theater. The music is very good and I really enjoy it. And I love puppets. Absolutely. Love puppets. Will always, like, they have a weird place in my heart and I'm going to love them forever. But that being said, the book is very long, like, unnecessarily long. And due to that, I'm probably going to give this show overall, I think I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Because I did enjoy it, but there's, like, it definitely has flaws.
Okay, fair enough. I pretty much agreed with everything you said, but I was going to give it an 8.
Oh, okay.
So.
Okay.
I think it's got enough heart for me.
That's very fair.
That it's a solid B.
Low B, high C. That's where I'm at.
No, it's definitely not a C for me.
Well, the humor, I mean, I love the humor in this show, too. It's just, it's so funny. Like, I was, like, laughing out loud watching it, like really early on in the show. But, like, just, it's the long stretches of time where it's just, like, exposition, background, dialogue, blah, blah, blah. Like, this is a musical. Make it a musical, you know? Well, that's curtains for us here at The Greatest Show Pod. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, please leave us a rating and review and tell all your friends about it. If you have thoughts on Starship, you can reach us all over social media at The Greatest Show Pod, or you can send us an email at thegreatestshowpodcast@gmail.com. Do you think the puppets are too ugly? Are they not ugly enough? Are you a fan of Team Starkid? What other shows have you seen by them, if so? Like, what makes them special for you if you're a really big fan of Team Starkid? We'd love to know. Just, you know, send us an email, shout us out on social media. We'd love to hear from you.
Do you want to come over to my place and let me rip off your head and let my larva devour your body?
No, Baguette, I don't.
It's the, like, gurgly Muppet voice. Let my larva devour your body.
It's the Greatest Show, Man is produced by Emily Chavone and Brantley Wheeler. Our theme song is by the amazing Patrick Duffy. Links to all of his contact info in the episode description. You can find us all over social media at Greatest Show Pod. Slide into Brantley's DMs and tell him why he's wrong and has horrible taste in musicals. If you have a suggestion for a musical we should cover in the future, send us an email at thegreatestshowpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next one.
That didn't make
sense.
We're
off to a great start. Listeners, what you need to know is that we just spent 20 minutes, not quite 20 minutes, 10 minutes trying to troubleshoot a microphone issue that wasn't really an issue because somebody left his Bluetooth headphones connected to his computer.
So now I've gone and turned off the Bluetooth connection on my computer so that doesn't happen again.
So if you know how Bluetooth works, and you can plug in your microphone, and you like musical theater, and you want to be a co-host on this podcast,
hit up Emily, because like apparently I can't do it anymore.
Apparently's on thin ice.
You're gonna fire me. It's just what it's gonna be now.
Maybe.
It's an inevitability at this point. There's no way around it.
But it would be one of those things where, like, when TV shows replace an actor partway through the run, and they don't acknowledge it at all.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's it. I'm not going to acknowledge that you ever existed. What are you eating?
Soup. I'm just doing this to annoy you now.
Why do you do like this when I have to edit the episode?